All right, welcome back to Who's Talking, segment three tonight. And before we go to Dave Glenn, our featured guest speaker here in the next few minutes, first I want to go to Darren real quick so we can remind folks how to follow Who's Talking.
That's right. You can reach Frank, Jim, myself here at 804-345-0910. That's 804-345-0910 here in the studio. Streaming live if you're on your computer on foxsportsrichmond.com. That's foxsportsrichmond.com. Also streaming on our sponsor's website, thesaber.com. Download the free iHeartRadio app and listen on your smartphone. And always, you can follow us, catch up with us, leave us messages on Facebook at Who's Talking.
Or you can meet us at 7 o'clock when we walk outside the studio, you know.
And go get a cold one.
There we go.
At Kindred Spirit.
There you go.
But at any rate, right. I think we do have Dave Glenn on the phone. As Frank said, ACC Sports Journal radio talk show host down in North Carolina. Dave, thanks for taking a couple of minutes to join us tonight.
Hey, how about Frank? Great to be with you guys, as always.
All right, I'll just ask you a quick one. Are we looking at Virginia Tech Clemson in the ACC football title game?
I wouldn't bet against it right now. Obviously, both of them are in the driver's seat, and the Tigers even have some wiggle room on their side, given that they're still undefeated. So the Hokies have to be careful. I mean, we expect them to win these games down the stretch, most of us. But stranger things have happened, and obviously North Carolina is right there neck and neck with the Hokies. So as long as they're tied, the Hokies have the tiebreaker over the Heels. But if the Hokies slip up and the Heels keep running the table, then it would be a Clemson-UNC rematch in the ACC title game.
So I see in the schedule here that Tar Heels still have Georgia Tech, Duke, Citadel, and NC State.
Correct.
And the Hokies, the dreaded Hokies, they have got Duke, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, and the Wahoos.
Right, and those ACC ones, obviously, are the ones that matter for ACC title purposes, and they'll be favored in all three of those games, the Hokies, but we see every week somebody who's favored go down, so that's why it makes it a little bit of a guessing game.
And, and Virginia almost knocked off Louisville, yeah. which for the rest of the conference, I don't know if they would have liked that or not, because it probably would have cost the conference a lot of money. But, you know, because right now they're, number five in the country? Yes, they're still number five in the AP. Clemson is number three in the AP. Alabama still appears to be head and shoulders ahead of everybody. But getting back to you and your radio show and the ACC Sports Journal, did you see this kind of year coming for football? And then we're going to, after that question, we're going to pivot to hoops.
I say to a degree. I think a lot of us did think that the Clemson Tigers would again be among the favorites for a trip to the college football playoff, and that has certainly proven to be the case under Dabo Swinney. And I think most of us had Louisville and Florida State as possibilities behind the Tigers, even right there in the Atlantic Division. And the Cardinals have lived up to the hype more than the Seminoles have, but they're still – all three of those Atlantic teams are still prominently in the national top 25. And you add UNC and Virginia Tech from the other side, you have five nationally ranked programs and others that have been in the rankings. So to a degree, I think we all knew that the ACC in football was deeper than it had been maybe ever. And as long as you have that national championship contender, a few years ago it was Florida State winning it all. More recently, Clemson's been on that roll. As long as you're in that picture and you can add some depth to it, well, then that's when you start building more of a football reputation the way the SEC has. And that means you can not just rest on your laurels as an ACC that is usually considered and described as the center of the college basketball universe.
That's the way we like to talk about it right there.
No. Listen to Hubbard. Hey, Dave, looking at the balance of the schedule for the Clemson Tigers, they still have Syracuse at home, Pittsburgh at home. They travel to Wake Forest, and then they finish their year against their state rival, South Carolina. So Gamecocks versus Tigers, always a fun time. Let's pivot over to basketball. Enjoyed seeing you down there in Charlotte. What are your thoughts on any news or developments relative to what you may have learned down there? I know you interviewed everybody but the water boys. So tell us what you picked up maybe from Tony Bennett and London Perentes while you sat with them.
I'll tell you one thing real quick, just because it happened since the last time we were all together. The idea that the ACC not only has that grant of rights well into the next decade, but the announced date of when the ACC network is going to launch, and already the digital network underway. I think that news that happened since the last time we all talked is just incredibly important and positive for this conference moving forward. When it comes to basketball specifically, I think John Swofford was thrilled that in his State of the ACC union address, so to speak, he didn't have to talk and dodge questions about the ACC network. And instead, he got to boast about the depth of ACC football.
Right.
He got to boast about, you know, six ACC basketball teams in last year's NCAA tournament, Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. That had never happened before. And here we are again with, you know, Duke preseason number one, UVA and UNC and Syracuse and Louisville and others in the preseason rankings as well. So I don't think you can have it much better than securing your financial future, silencing the realignment or, you know, who might leave the ACC rumors because of the contract extensions, upgrading your TV broadcast partner contracts, and showing depth in football and men's basketball. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. And no matter how the details unfold, basketball or otherwise, we're still going to be talking about the ACC. It's called a Power Five conference, but I think it's secured its place right up there with the SEC and the Big Ten as one of the three most important, most powerful conferences in the entire country.
No doubt about that. You know, I don't know if I shared this with you, or you most likely already knew it, but I did talk to the commissioner, John Swofford, one-on-one right after his speech, and I asked him about his efforts or knowledge concerning an early signing period for football, and he said something interesting to me. He said, yes, he thought it would happen by 2018, but he said there might be two early signing periods. So that would be, I think, a welcome relief and a good thing for high school kids and the ACC, as well as the rest of the NCAA teams out there. Because let's face it, if a kid makes a commitment and announces in, let's say, August or July, but is getting still pursued for months and months and months, you know, it takes a pretty resilient kid to keep those people at bay. And, you know, it's hard for coaches to slot their players by position if people are still nipping at their heels, so to speak. So any thoughts on that on your end?
Well, it's a mixed bag, because no matter which way you choose, there are pluses and minuses. We already have examples of players signing with schools who then fire their coaches. And that would only increase if you have the earlier signing periods, even more examples of that. So I understand why they're exploring it. I understand why many, but not all, the ACC coaches are in favor of it. I do think the pluses outweigh the minuses when it comes to an early signing period, because obviously you don't have to. It's just an option. And if you're not sure, you know, if there's your dream school who hasn't offered you and you have a chance to sign somewhere else in August or whatever they decide, but that dream school would make you change your mind, well then, you know, as a 17-year-old, you probably should be mature enough not to sign and wait to see how the rest of your recruitment shakes out. But those things are easier said than done. Not all of these youngsters have great advisors around them. So it might just make the wild, wild west a little bit less wild with an early signing period. But I don't think we're going to remake, you know, the recruiting world all in one swoop, and it's going to continue to have some of the ugly underbelly that it's always had.
I think we got breaking news here. Some of these kids are still 17 years old? No.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're visiting with Dave Glenn. Dave, let's go back to basketball. Talk to me a little bit about some of these newcomers to the ACC. I was interested to see Dennis Smith Jr., as the odds-on choice as both Rookie of the Year and first-team ACC. So if you're a first-team ACC selection and a rookie, that's pretty impressive.
I agree, Hobo. And here's one more for you. One of the websites that follows the NBA draft very closely has listed Dennis Smith Jr. of NC State as the projected number one overall pick next year, meaning after his freshman season with the Wolfpack. So that's even more spectacular. He is a five-star point guard out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. I did see him play a little bit at the high school level. but he suffered a major knee injury, so he missed his senior season. One other thing to remember about him is that whereas he is one of the most highly regarded Wolfpack basketball signees ever, or as far back at least as recruiting rankings go, he is a young man who's about to turn 19 years old. And if you met him, maybe Frank did in Charlotte, I mean, he's a physically strong, mature young man. So he's not, you know, we think sometimes, I know when I got to my college campus, I was 17 years old. Dennis Smith Jr. enrolled at NC State this past January, so he's gotten acclimated medically and basketball-wise and academically. But he also turns 19 here shortly. So that's one way that you might be able to overcome the more typical freshman adjustment period. This guy's been playing at a very high level, AAU and otherwise, except for his injury period. And he's even had these 8 or 9 months to get acclimated on a college campus, get the best medical treatment. They say he's 100%+ physically now, and at almost 19 years old, he's not going to have to deal with the massive transition that some of these guys who are slimmer or just not as strong have to deal with during their first years on a college campus.
Just for the record, I was also 17 when I got to college.
Yeah.
You know, just a couple other guys real quick. I can't go through. Jason Tatum of Duke and Harry Giles of Duke. What do you know about them?
Yeah, the two things to remember are, one, they're both five-star talents that have the ability to be first-team All-ACC when they're healthy. But the asterisk to put on that is that Harry Giles is out for a while after a follow-up knee surgery, and he had a bunch of knee problems in high school. So when healthy, he's phenomenal and an NBA lottery pick. True. When does he get healthy? We don't know. And Jason Tatum's actually on the shelf with a less serious ankle injury for a couple of weeks or so. He's a 6'8 wing player. And again, if healthy, Mike Krzyzewski said in Charlotte, he believes he has that ideal blend of proven returnees in the upper classes like Emile Jefferson and Grayson Allen, but also another one of his amazing recruiting classes and freshmen like Harry Giles, Jason Tatum, Frank Jackson, Marquise Bolden. It's an incredible class at Duke. And he's going to have that amazing blend of young and old.
You know, we feel pretty good about our class at Virginia. What are your comments on the first-year kids in UVA?
The guys that I've seen the most of, and if I had to guess, I would expect would help more right away, would be Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome in the backcourt. Not that all of them could not help, but those are two guys, top 50 high school players. As long as they can convince Coach Bennett, obviously, that they know and understand his defensive principles and the pack line defense, you got to know that to earn your playing time. To me, based on what I saw in high school, those guys are a little bit more ready to help right away, whereas a guy like Jay Huff at almost 7 feet tall, I saw him here in Durham, North Carolina, excellent prospect, but I'd be surprised if he was, you know, in the top 6 or 7 right out of the gate. So we'll see. The good news is, you know, Tony Bennett signed 4 different top 100 players, and he has a red shirt back on top of that. And that's the kind of talent pipeline that you have to keep flowing. You know, in the aftermath of, you guys know the deal, 2 years ago it was saying goodbye to Joe Harris and Akil Mitchell. Then the next year, Justin Anderson and Darian Atkins. And this past year, Malcolm Brogdon and Anthony Gill and others. So that's a lot of talent leaving. And with that incoming class, that means there's a lot more talent on the way.
You know, one proven addition to the Cavalier lineup will be Austin Nichols. A 6'9", 235-pound forward. And this young man is actually, I think he's 21. Proven commodity when he was at Memphis, was first team, all conference. And by all accounts, the transition year as a redshirt was very positive for him, both physically and also in terms of getting acclimated to the pack line. Virginia, in essence, now has a different type of inside-out game with London Perantes working the ball down low and feeding Austin Nichols. Mamadi Diakite, Jack Salt, Jared Reuter, and a host of others will battle, and Isaiah Wilkins will be battling for rebounds. Virginia's got a slew of guards. You know,
no doubt about it.
I mean,
yeah.
Virginia is guard-heavy, and I think people underestimate the aspect of Mariel Shayok. This is his third year. Darius Thompson is really, it's his fourth year in college basketball, and Devin Hall is third year. So, you know, Bennett has the guys that can move the ball and shoot the ball, and if you can teach these big guys and the newcomers how to fit in, don't you think they should be pretty formidable?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I have a top third of the ACC that I'll just be shocked if any of them are not really, really good. And it is Duke and UNC and UVA and Syracuse and Louisville. I'll be surprised if anybody falls out of the pace out of that top five. And Virginia's right solidly in there. And it's actually one reason is because it's a continuation of some familiar themes, not only Tony Bennett and what he brings to the table, but Joe Harris outside, Akil Mitchell inside. Next year, Justin Anderson outside, Darian Atkins inside. Next year, Malcolm Brogdon, you know, maybe the most decorated UVA basketball player since Ralph Sampson outside, Anthony Gill, among others, inside. You know, that has a chance to continue in a really positive way with Parentes leading the way on the perimeter and maybe Nichols leading the way in the post. That's as good a starting point as you can get. All coaches want balance outside, inside. All coaches want experience. Many of the guys we just listed are juniors or seniors. Parentes, in his case, coming back for his senior year. And some of the guys you mentioned, Frank, really improved their three-point shooting. I mean, Parentes was almost 50% last year. Shayok was in the 40s. Thompson was around 40%, I think, from three-point land. So that culture of getting better every year, it's kind of like Louisville, where sometimes you don't think Rick Pitino has enough players, and then you see the guys who are returning as dramatically improved versions of themselves. And that's why programs like UVA are getting that reputation that even if you haven't seen the newcomers, you've seen enough of the returnees and you've seen enough of Tony Bennett to know that they're not going to fall out of the running in the ACC.
One question for you, then we're going to cut you loose. Senior point guard, shooting guard combo, FSU's Xavier Ratham-Mays. I talked to him a little bit on Wednesday, and he said he was ready to play 94 feet, 40 minutes every game. Yet nobody named him, or he didn't get enough votes to be first or second team All-ACC. Do you think he's being overlooked? And if so, could that be dangerous? Because Bacon was not overlooked, but to me, the other young man seemed really fired up.
XRM, as they call him down there. Yeah, he's a player. He just needs to show that he can be an example of improving a lot from one year to another.
Yes.
Because as a guard, you know, he's become a better distributor, and his dad played pro ball, so he knows that at 6'4", he's going to need to be a distributor and probably a shooter to be an NBA guy. He couldn't hit 30% of his three-pointers last year.
Yeah.
So if he comes back as a much better shooter, now that he's already shown he can be a distributor, that's, I think, the hesitation. You can't shoot 40% from the field and less than 30% on three-pointers and expect people to just write you in as preseason All-ACC because he's amazing to watch. He's a thrill show.
Yes.
But you have to be more consistent. This is a tough, tough league with a lot of good players. And if you want, you know, to be one of those 5 or 10 or 15 on the All-ACC ballot, you need to be more consistent than he was these last 2 years.
Yeah, a lot of good players, a lot of good coaches, a lot of good teams. It's going to be another great year for ACC hoops. But, Dave, we thank you for your time. Look forward to having you back as we get into the basketball season.
Okay, guys. Always fun to be with you. Take care.
All right, Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports General. We'll be back with the Olympic report. Look at next week's show. Look at the ACC schedule for this weekend and a lot of other things. Stay tuned. You're listening to Who's Talking.